standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Appreciate the boys locking today, letting us fill in. Sean Mapes, Will Kunkel here with you. We're going to dive into this Texas game a little bit because some people think this is a must-win game. Just by definition, it's just simply not a must-win game for the Texans against the Titans Sunday at NRG Stadium. Kickoff at noon. 7-point favorites for Houston. Now, I believe that the 2018 Texans are the last team to make the playoffs at 0-3. And then just one time in the history of the NFL, the 1992 San Diego Chargers have made the playoffs at 0-4.
Correct. And no team has made it 0-5 or worse.
Okay. Yeah. So statistically speaking, it's not even a must-win game. It's an extremely important game. I agree with you that this game for the Texans is super important, but it is not must-win.
Well, you just laid out some of the numbers I was going to bring up. Like, if they start 0-4, only one team in how many years of NFL football? 80 years? Has ever made the playoffs. Because to me, must-win means if you don't win it, your season's over. By that stat, only the 1992 Chargers have ever made it if they're 0-4. And we know what waits for the Texans in Week 5, a road trip to Baltimore. We know they're going to get curb stomped, so they're 0-5. The very definition to me of must-win is if you don't win it, your season's over. If they don't
beat
the Titans.
Yes, but it is – but. As in, like, the little E in the standings gets your name put next to it. That is must win. Okay. Not statistically, not based on what other teams did in the 90s.
Let me just simplify it. If they lose to the Titans, will you say that they can still make the playoffs?
Hell no.
There you go. It's a must win.
By definition, actually, it's a must win. I'll say this. I will say that they can still make the playoffs if the Colts and Jaguars lose.
Oh,
I'm
come
just
on.
Saying.
If they're 0-4 going to Baltimore,
the goal –
you're not going to say
the
they can make the playoffs.
The goal isn't to be one of the better teams in the AFC. The goal isn't to get 10 wins. The goal now is to just win the AFC South, and the AFC South is bad enough to where that's possible. Like, it's possible.
If they're 0-5?
If the other teams lose, I'm just saying, like, that's, yes, it's a caveat. Yes, it's an uphill battle. I'm not, like, trying to necessarily die on this hill, and I'm not betting on it. I'm not putting my money on it. To be clear.
Feels like you're agreeing with me then.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying it's not must win, but it's
it is.
Super
if they're
oh, super
if they're,
wanna win.
If they're 0-5 if they're
it's really, really, really ought
yeah,
to win.
I'd really like them to win.
If they're 0-5 with the game at the Seahawks, the Broncos, the Niners, the Bills, the Chiefs, a road game at the Colts.
It's just not a must win. Like the words in this language have meaning. Words have meaning.
Yeah. And
I'm just saying. What do you say if it's truly a must win? Like, nah, for real, dog, must win.
No, it is a must win because I think I defined at the start of this. If you're saying a loss ends your season, it's must win.
But literally, you don't play any more games. I mean, like, literally, the little E goes next to your name in the standings. That is the end of the season.
They should.
Just saying, that's the definition.
If they lose to this Titans team, they should just put the E.
You might as well. I agree. They might as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So this
if they lose this game, no one in the city of Houston will say they're going to make the playoffs. To me, that by definition makes it a must win.
I bet you some people will call
someone
in and say
will.
It.
Texans Jacob will.
But let's agree to disagree.
I feel like you kind of agree with me. You just want to say it.
I don't agree with you because it's not a must-win game. It's an extremely important game, like, for sure.
So ask again. If they lose, will you pick them to make the playoffs?
I'm not picking them. No.
Okay, must-win.
Unless.
Case dismissed.
But my pick. Hey, this is shockingly. I've lost so many bets in my life. that could be another one. Now, the odds aren't, like, it's on the board. The bet would still be on the board for you to make a whole bunch of money if they lose, right? Therefore, they still have a chance.
At Ravens, at Seahawks,
yes,
Broncos, Niners, Chiefs, Bills, at Colts.
Like Kevin says, Kevin Malone says, when someone gives you 10,001 odds, you take that bet.
Yeah,
he also then dropped the chili all over the floor. That's what the Texans do on offense every week.
Dictionary.
That's true. Yeah, like I don't – do you think they're going to make the playoffs as we sit here right now?
No.
Mapes?
No.
Yeah, I don't – I'm not ready to commit one way or the other, honestly, but I don't think they will.
Yeah.
I'm not writing them off. I don't think they will. Again, it goes back to our conversation in the first segment.
I've seen nothing that says this offense won't suck on Sunday. Like, I've seen nothing from this offense.
I think they can suck less than the Titans, but it won't change my opinion on them.
Yeah, sucking less at this point is almost... It's almost worse if that's all you do, is you just suck less.
It feels like all they're capable of.
If they lose, or if they win a disgusting game on Sunday where there's two red zone cut-ins from Scott Hansen the whole game, like, I don't think that's actually...
Red Zone can actually show more commercials when the Texans are in the window because they never have to cut to it.
Please tell me about Verizon instead of watching this game.
This offense gives this... It gives everyone no hope, and that's what really sucks is that we came into the season with such high expectations. And that's, again, maybe that's on us. Maybe that's on us for selling it, but it's not like the players didn't sell it. They gave us the five-headed monster offense talk last year. CJ did with Joe and Tank and Stefan and Nico and Dalton. I mean, there was a five-headed monster the way he talked about it.
That head's kind of small when he gets to Dalton. It's like that meme with the three dragons, and one of them looks real goofy.
Jokes aside,
he's... Maybe been one of their best players on offense.
That's more of an indictment on the offense than it is a compliment to Dalton.
Very true. But he hasn't been a detriment. That's the thing. We want to – this conversation, we always want to have these conversations around the players. Like, so many people want to indict CJ, or they want – and it's always – or about Yordan, or about Christian Walker, whoever. And we'll get to the Astros later here on 97.5, 92.5. This is not even about the players. It's so bad. The issue isn't even getting to the players to where you can blame the players, because the players aren't being put into position to have success, and I don't know how you change that, because Nick Caley isn't going to learn how to call an offense all of a sudden because it hasn't changed over 3 weeks. That's my biggest hang-up with this team.
Yeah, the problems are literally systemic. It is the system that they're running that is the problem. It is, and even if you want to say it's not completely Nick Caley, it's some of the groceries
the coaching
that he's
staff.
Yeah, that he's having to cook this dish with. Like, it is just all, like, it is all bad. Like you said, we, especially quarterbacks, it is just you are on trial every week unless you are one of, like, five guys that aren't on trial. After you have a bad game, especially you play poorly like the Texans did on a Monday night football game, and then you follow it up with another clunker and one that we were probably saying was, if not a must win, a very, very important win last week in Jacksonville, and you go out and you score 10 points. Like, it is natural that the quarterback is going to catch the brunt of that, especially because it's what, you know, casual fans sitting on your couch.
Yeah, natural if you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, you just
it's
see,
just
like,
not his fault.
He's getting sacked. He's throwing incompletions. Like, hey, get it to the guys. Throw it to the open guy. And you look at it, there's no one open because, like I said, it's a systemic issue of no one's getting open, no one can get open, and there might be a little bit of no one knows what they're running.
No one knows how to get the guys open even.
Yeah.
Like, let alone... forget about whether or not a wide receiver can get open. Does your route actually, does the route tree allow you to get open? Or are you running your route near another guy who's running his route, which brings defenders closer together? In all sports, in hockey, basketball, and football, most importantly, and soccer, spacing is the key to offensive success. We talked about this all season with the Rockets. Where the hell is the spacing? Mm. When you don't have spacing, all the defense has to do is clamp down, bog down, stay in their spot, and do nothing. There's no decisions to be made. There's no consequences if you make the wrong decisions. You're not out of position because you're only a foot away from where the hell you were a second ago. So if there's no spacing, the defense doesn't have to do anything. They just have to be around, and then the guys will come to them, and they are automatically defended.
Yeah, and there's an element of, like, you're just not pushing the defense to do anything out of their comfort zone. It is, like you said, you can just throw bodies where these receivers are. And, well, guess what? You're not going to be able to hurt me on the other side of the field where there's nobody. It's all in this 10-yard box that we can put. You know, you have three receivers there. We can put four defensive backs there.
And to the point of this conversation, I heard the morning show talking about, but the Texans, when they line up in tight formations versus spread formations, they're one of the worst offenses in the league in tight formation.
No
but
kidding.
It improves... Not greatly. It's still, like, you know, 20th, but it improves when they spread it out.
20th versus 32nd.
That's the number that Dale gave. It's like worst in the league versus 20th, which is a big difference.
It's though. A huge difference. If you extrapolated 20th across the whole game. You get a damn touchdown.
I was going to say, extrapolate that across the whole season. If I told you right now that the Texans were the 20th best offense in the NFL for the first three games.
Like, we could live with it.
What do you think the record is?
They're 3-0.
Probably 2. Yeah,
they've lost everything by one possession.
Yeah, maybe 3-0.
They're close, Brian.
Maybe 3-0.
They're close.
They are close. They are close. The problem is they're too close. They got to spread it out.
Yes, they are too close physically to each other, and they're thus easier to defend, but... Yeah, it's so interesting because it is something where it's like they are close to winning games. I don't think they're close to being a good team. Or I don't think they're close to
I think they're closer to being a good team.
I don't think they're close to being good offense.
They're
That's
not.
That's what I should have said.
The problem is if you have a pie chart, and I've talked kind of a lot about this in the offseason. If you have a pie chart, special teams, offense, defense, you'd like to split that up as evenly as possible because if your offense has a bad day, then your defense can pick up the slack. If the special teams bungles a play, then your offensive defense is there to save them. Right now, this pie chart is about 80% defense, 10% special teams, and 10% offense. Therefore, if your defense doesn't bow up against the Buccaneers, like, forget about it.
Yeah.
They can have 10 great drives defensively, but if they're not money every single time, they have to play nearly to perfection.
I think the Bucs game is the perfect pie chart game. It is the perfect one of what'd you get in that game? You got a absolute fantastic performance by that defense for all but the last drive, more or less.
You got a punt. Return or kick return for 53-plus yards and in a critical moment.
Yes.
You had a block punt. And the offense twice had field of 25 yards to go to touchdown and 35 yards. Mm-hmm. One of those drives ended up in no points and one time just 3 points.
Exactly. Like, it's something where I remember watching that game. I was thinking, like, you know, the Texans are a good team. They just have such a bad offense that I'm not sure that they are a good team. And now they're 0-3. But it was something where... It feels like you're wasting, and it's the worst place to be as a fan, is you are wasting a championship defense and a very good special teams unit.
You are, it's an old age-old phrase, you are as strong as your weakest link, and nothing is more true in football because it's such a team sport.
Yeah.
Like, this defense I thought could be the best defense in the NFL if the offense was good. That's how this works, because then it's a longer field to defend. You got points on the board. You can pin your ears back and get after the quarterback with a great pass rush. That's when you become the best defense in the NFL. If you're always chasing points, you can't do that and you can't play that way. And then all of a sudden you're on the field more. And instead of being the seventh best, you're now the 10th best.
I have a stat that perfectly lays this out. I don't know if you saw Stressen's retweeted this. This is from NBC Sports. But so fewest points allowed in the league right now. Packers 1, Seahawks 2, Niners 3, Chargers 4, Texans 5, Cardinals 6, and Jaguars 8. Now, this was before the Cardinals result last night. But think about those teams again. Packers, Seahawks, Niners, Chargers, Texans, Cardinals, Jaguars. The records of those teams, 2-1, 2-1, 3-0, 3-0, 0-3, 2-1, 2-1.
Which was the 0-3 team, Brian?
Yeah, I know. Every other team in that top eight is either 3-0 or 2-1. Somehow the Texans, because of how the disproportion on that pie chart, have found a way to make themselves 0-3.
If you have a chain and you have two pieces of steel holding each other together, and then right in between you got some straw, like, the chain's broken. Yeah. That's the offense of the Texans. It doesn't matter how good the other ones are when you're relying on them all the time. By the way, you guys mentioned the 20th offense in the NFL, what they would be. Texans are scoring 12.7 points per game right now. That is a full 1.3 points fewer than the Falcons, who got shut out last week.
Yeah.
You know how bad that is?
How
the David Carr 2002 Texans average more points per game.
The 20th team in the NFL? 20.5 points. If they're scoring 20.5 points, they're winning every game by double digits.
That's a touchdown improvement.
Yeah.
It's a touchdown improvement, and you're winning every game.
Yeah.
By double digits.
And I think it's less than even just adding the 8 points to the scoreboard. It's also, like you said, what you're asking this defense to do time and time again, mm-hmm. putting them in disadvantageous positions, putting them back on the field very quickly because you can't move the ball. Like, we brought up the 2000s Ravens talking about this defense, and I think that this defense could have been a team that or it could have been a unit that drives a team very far in the playoffs. I mean, Jamal Lewis ran for 1,300 yards.
It's like they had an offense.
They had an offense. We all talk about Trent Dilfer, and he was bad, but they had an offense.
But that's the thing. Like, Trent wasn't bad. He just wasn't the guy that went out there and won the game for you.
Yeah.
You had an offense that could stay on the field, run the ball, punish a defense, keep their own defense off the field for long enough to be able to recover. Like, that's all you need to do when you have a great defense like that. This offense can't even do that.
And when you have a running game like that, you know what you do when your team, like the Ravens did a lot that season, like the Texans have done this season, when you get a turnover, like when you get a short field like we're talking about in the Monday night game, you can punch it in the red zone.
Capitalize.
You don't get stood up on fourth and goal against the Bucks. You don't need to throw a goal line fade to Nico Collins that is into the first row. You don't need to have the rollout, the sprint out to the left to where there's nobody open. You don't need to do that because you can give the ball to your running back and punch it in. That is just, again, it is just a comprehensive failure by the Houston Texans offense that you can't even do the Iowa football, like complimentary football, your way to a decent season.
I hear what you're saying. Kirk Ferentz for next Texans OC.
His son, maybe. I don't know.
LOL, but he's coached football for so long, he would at least know how to attack defense.
We'd have good tight ends.
Those teams go 8-4. You know, like they're unwatchable. They are bad against the elite. But you can get decent results by doing that, and the Texans just can't do that. In any way, they don't have a skill that you can hang your hat on when it comes to offense. There's not one thing that you're like.
But that's the thing is, like, you're right in regards to what we're seeing on the field, but they have skill players that can do a whole bunch of things. They do have guys.
Yes, I'm talking about the results.
We're just not seeing it because it's so bad. All right, Jeff from Clear Lake has something stupid to say.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Say you're dumb. Let's hear your dumb opinion on this game. Say it. I dare you.
Well, it's a must. It's a must win, man. It's probably the biggest game of the year. Absolutely biggest game of the year.
It's definitely the biggest game of the year because it's the next game.
If they lose this game, they're going to fall apart. I can see Davis Mills starting in Baltimore. Why would you put CJ out there? Why would you take a chance of CJ getting hurt if you're 0-4?
This game is as important of a game
as
there is.
Mills is already going to be being talked about.
There's no doubt.
I think Mills is going to be Mills is going to be mentioned if GJ has more interceptions than he does touchdown in this game. It's going to be a big letdown for the team. It's going to fall apart. Big must win game for them.
All right, Jeff, I appreciate that. So that brings
me to the call of the day.
Oh yeah, great. You stand by everything that Jeff said.
Yes. Yeah.
So here's something.
No, not the Davis Mills part.
Davis Mills?
I separate myself from that part.
No, here in the boat, man. It's either Democrat, Republican, and everything in between.
Okay,
I'm jumping out. To take everything. So he brings it. Someone else made this point. I don't know if it was on ESPN radio here, but someone said, like, listen. If things are going bad, like against against the Jaguars, if you're CJ Stroud, just let it fly. But you can't just let it fly. You're not in a position. CJ Stroud has to be extremely cautious. He has to do the exact opposite, because if he makes any mistake, then the game's over.
Yeah.
Like, he can't make any mistake, and that's not fair to CJ. Like, he can't have to play perfect. So the notion of, oh, just let it fly, throw it all over the yard, just go for it. And then if it doesn't work out, then you're losing these games by 30 points because you're not going to be in a situation again where maybe you even have a chance at a touchdown or, quote-unquote, letting it fly.
Yeah, you can't set the other team up in advantageous positions for the offense, because even if we do think this defense is really good and they've proven that they are one of the best defenses in the league, you know, they give up 20 points. You lose every time.
Yeah, like CJ can't let it fly. No one on this offense can make a risk. No one can take a risk. No one defensively should be able to take a risk, because they got to be damn near perfect. This team is playing with a razor margin edge. That's how the NFL is in general. But if you're a good team, you're not living like that every single Sunday. You're taking care of business, winning games by the spread or by two scores here and there, because you're a good team and you're playing three phases of football. This team is playing one and a half phases of football.
Yeah,
right now.
You just...
Like, you're playing with fire every single time. Does Eddie have something good to say? Or
I mean, that's the open to interpretation.
Eddie, what do you have to say, my man?
Hey, guys, what's going on? I'm just curious, what do you guys think the narrative would be right now if we were 3-0? You know, Ogunbowale doesn't fumble on that last drive. We beat the Rams against the Bucks. Tau Toto doesn't miss that critical tackle on fourth down against Baker Mayfield. And Nico Collins doesn't fumble near the goal line against the Jaguars and we win the game.
Eddie, first of all, how dare you not listen start to finish? How dare you not listening from 3 o'clock all the way through 6 o'clock? We've talked about this, and so I'm going to address your answer because it's a good question, Eddie. You know what's hilarious is that he said that Nico Collins was near the goal line. Was he like on the 25?
They would have been in the red zone. They would have added a fifth red zone possession. But
that's how it feels when you're like close to the red zone, is that you feel like you're close to the goal line. That's how bad it's been offensively. Like, oh my God, yeah. We were right there.
I could almost,
still 30 yards away, but it feels so close.
I can almost see it in the frame of the CBS wide shot.
You can hardly cross midfield. So now when you do, it's like, oh my God, we're on the goal line.
It feels like that stat needs to be like mentioned 1,000 times. Like the failure. Four red zone trips in 3 games is the craziest offensive failure stat I've ever heard.
Especially when you look at the roster. This roster is not this bad. Like, it's just not. I know the offensive line's not good. That's not me pumping up this offensive line. They're not that good. But the scheme, that's how bad the scheme is. But Eddie, to answer your question, we talked about this, is that we would say, all right, you never apologize for 3-0. You take 3-0 and you try to build on it to actually look good. But nobody is saying that this is a good offense. Nobody is saying that once we see the Ravens, that's going to be a fun game. Let's get the Chiefs in. Let's see where let's use that game as a measuring stick. Nobody that watches the game would actually believe that.
No, I mean, if they were 3-0, like we said, we'd be having the same conversations. It is just the, like, hey, but you'll take the 3 wins. Like, it would be less.
You'd take the panic out of our voice is what you would do.
Yeah, it would be. It's the.
We wouldn't have to have must-win conversations.
You wouldn't have to have. No. Yeah, you wouldn't have to have a non-must-win, must-win.
You mean the one that
game.
Is a must-win?
Yeah.
The whole tenor of the last 25 minutes would have been different.
Yeah, like, you just take away some of the not even hyperbole. You just take away the panic in your voice because
the urgency.
Despite being 3-0 or despite having a bad offense and kind of knowing what's on the horizon, you have your head above water and you can survive with your head above water. We not only don't have our head above water, we're about to get our head pushed down underwater, unfortunately. And we have no reason to think that anyone's going to throw a safety raft out there to save us. Like, that's the problem.
No, the Ravens are going to hold you under until you stop moving.
I
pulled this up.
You thought, like, we were actually not a bad football team last year, and they embarrassed us.
Was it 34-2?
31-2.
Oh, my bad. But Beyonce was great.
I just want to be fair. I don't want to put, like, all of the Texans' history against the Ravens on this current unit. The Ravens are 13-2 all time against the Texans. Again, not all that's C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryan era football.
I don't care about the history personally.
I would say the last three, they've played 3 times the last 2 years. 31-2 on Christmas. 34-10. Is that the playoff game? Yeah, I think that's the playoff game. And then week 1 of 2023, 25-9.
And you already know this answer, Sean, but how many touchdowns in those 3 games did the Texans score?
One.
Zero.
Oh.
Zero.
Sounds familiar.
No touchdowns in their last 3 games against the Ravens.
That's tough. That's a tough one to wear. And even if you go like the Lamar Jackson era, you're adding in a 33-16 and a 41-7. Like, this is something. This is a mount. That's why to even pretend like you have a chance, I won't say the MS word, but I will say you really got to win against the Titans because the Ravens, their defense has been bad. I don't know if they've been bad enough for you to get a win in Baltimore.
All right, we're going to take a break here on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Will Kunkel and Sean Mapes filling in for Joe George and Jeremy Branham. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Get involved. Text us. Call us. Coming up after the break, let's talk about the Astros. How would you define this season? Because they actually are not in must-win territory either, technically. because they do not.
We're
going to
have another argument.
All three games. We're going to talk about what has to happen for the Astros to make the playoffs, why it's not must-win, because we understand the English language and what words mean on the other side of this break.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back in here. Took a bite of a Snickers. Great timing. Thanks for all that.
Hey, I think a Snickers is needed after the must-win talk. I think you're not you when you're angry. And Brian,
I wish they still did those commercials.
Brian got you
angry. Are you saying that as someone that had to eat a Snickers for the last hour yesterday?
Yes, we did we did the first segment with, like Stephen A. Smith or someone. Now we have Will Kunkel back in studio with us now that he's himself after a bite of a Snickers.
Will Kunkel, Sean Mapes filling in. By the way, Will Kunkel, find me on YouTube, Kicking It with Kunkel, my show there. We've been talking about the Texans ad nauseum and making us nauseous because the offense is that bad.
Go Texas.
Speaking of, let's talk about the Astros. Not must win. They have three games left. They do not have to sweep.
They got to sweep.
No, they don't. Words have meanings, USOB. Words have meaning. They can go 2-1, and if the Guardians or the Tigers get swept, they make the playoffs. That is possible. Have you seen the Tigers lose 12 in a row?
I thought it was Tigers or Boston, but either way, like I'm not betting on one of those teams going 0-3. They got to sweep.
They do not have to sweep. So, but even if they sweep, they still need some stuff to go their way.
They need help no matter what.
They lose every tiebreaker, unfortunately, with everybody that is involved, whether it's the Guardians, the Red Sox, or the Tigers. They lose all the tiebreakers. Big series, obviously. And Jason Alexander on the bump tonight for the Astros.
Summer of joy!
This season, Astro fans, you know, just kind of take a deep breath and realize what y'all have had for the last 8 years. And I did a piece on this on Kicking with Kunkel on my YouTube that you can make the very valid argument that the Astros are the best sports franchise in America over the last decade. The competition are the Chiefs and the Warriors. Over the last 10 years, they have, I believe, 7 straight ALCSs at a point. They've gone to the playoffs 8 years out of 10 years, and they have 2 World Series. There is nothing to scoff at there. If you're the Dodgers or the Yankees, you would kill for that success. The Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2009. And yeah, I get it. The Yankees are like always relevant, like every year, not just 10 years.
I think they're 10 out of 10 in the last 10 for making the playoffs.
But that's, you know, I think if you're a Yankees fan, you still would rather have the success at the peak that the Astros have had. It is crazy how good they've been. This year, the injury bug just caught him. Like, I don't think that this is a Joe Espada thing. I don't think this is a lack of talent thing. There is some issues. It's not a perfect team.
Yeah.
But if they don't get that injury bug the way they did, they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's where we've talked a lot this week about, like, who's farther away from their ultimate goal, winning a championship, the Texans or the Astros. To me, it's like it's pretty obviously the Astros, because they're only going to miss the playoffs, if they do miss the playoffs, by a game or two. It might even come down to tiebreakers as far as that, where the Texans, we spent the first hour and a half talking about how bad things are with them. And
I love that question.
I think that you hit it on the head where it's not solely because of the injuries, but I think the injuries put you in such a spot to where at some point the dam just kind of breaks and you can't keep asking for the Taylor Trammells, the Zach Cole, any of the Zachs. You can't keep asking for Jason Alexander to be your ace. Like, at a certain point, you can't be a Disney movie and the best story
have
in
the
sports.
Science teacher come in and start blowing 96 fast news.
If there's a couple more injuries, they might have had a golden retriever play outfield at some point. At some point, you actually
Airbuck a ball, though.
You can't do that. at some point. And I think that's where the Astros found themselves. Where were they perfect? No. Did they take care of business, like winning some of these tiebreakers? No. But at the same time, they're in this position primarily because of how historically injured they've been.
Here's the issue with the injuries. It's not that they happened. Every team gets injuries. It's the fact that they happened all season long.
Yeah.
So you play the small sample size game with whether it's Trammell or Short or Jason Alexander or whoever, and you'll take that lightning in the bottle. And those guys can be heroes for a weekend. They can be heroes for 2 weeks or a month. The problem is they're in the minors for a reason. They can't play at that level for an entire season. And you're asking them to play at that level all season, not because of anything other than bad luck. Your rotation was hammered because Spencer Arrighetti took, allegedly, has anyone seen that video?
Oh, yeah. We need the security cam on the batting practice.
Has anyone conspiracy? Seen this? I'm just saying, like, was it, is that what happened?
We're just asking questions, Brian.
All I'm saying is, we were told that he got hit in the right hand during BP on the road somewhere. I forget what it was.
Seattle.
Interesting.
And he was missed basically the rest of the year and was irrelevant all year. And he was one of my favorite pitchers coming into the season. I had him in fantasy. I thought he was going to be an absolute stud. So anyway, like freak injuries, pile that on top of other injuries, season-ending injuries, trades you made, guys get hurt. But it just happened all year long. So you can't have guys come up and fill in for 100 games. That's not their job. That's not their role. That's not what they're expected to do. And then you pile that on with your studs get hurt. Jeremy Pena has missed a couple significant stretches. Yordan Alvarez has now done this in a couple straight years. So it's just not fair, and that's why this team is where they are. I don't think it's a Dana Brown issue or a Joe Espada issue, because I think Dana Brown did a pretty nice job with this team, and he's trying to reload and also still have a future.
Yeah, that to me is what this team kind of needs, and it's not an answer you're going to get in 2025, is the, like, you are kind of shifting gears from the 2017 guys and the 2022 guys. You're going to need the next, generation of Astros, not even stars, because you still have the stars on your team. Like you said, the problem was that they're hurt too much. But you need that next wave of reinforcements to come. And you got a lot of reinforcements. The thing is, there are a bunch of good stories because they're 28-year-olds that were in the minors, and they're not really long-term prospects. I think with the injuries, I think we can kind of separate it a little bit as far as the blame game with injuries go from the amount of injuries they had, which I think they're relatively, like, that's just things happen. Like, that's bad luck. But the return-to-play procedures have just been abysmal this year, and I don't know how much of that is just messaging or how much of that is actually...
I think it's all messaging.
Okay.
Like, I just think that we're told one thing and then it doesn't happen, and then we blow it up to be something that's crazy, because if you watch teams across the league, it's hardly rare that, like, someone's expected to come back as soon as the 10-day DL stint is over, and it doesn't happen. Like, that happens all over the place.
I think it's a little different than the Astros, though, because they're putting guys back out there that are still hurt.
To me, it's like the Jake
Multiple
Myers.
Multiple times.
The Jake Myers one is the
And
the
Yordan.
Bad one.
He was, I mean, he broke or he re-injured his hand twice when he was going through activities to return to the field.
Jeremy Pena broke his rib,
stayed in the game, and then was lifting weights after the game.
You got to rely on these guys to be true judgment of, like, what's going on. If Yordan says I'm good, you can't tell him no, it's not.
Yeah.
And if Jeremy says my rib is fine, I can lift, you can't be like, no, little boy, come with me.
I mean, you can't, because Yordan's hand wasn't healed. They didn't even know he had a broken bone. You could take an x-ray before you put him back out there.
I think some of that is, though, on Yordan, of, like, communication, because we've seen that with Yordan before.
If I come in here and I say, like, my voice is good, and all of a sudden I lose it, you're like, he said his voice was good. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? Like, you can't test.
Well, there's no x-ray to see if your voice is actually good. They have the technology.
I know, and I think maybe
to fact-check these guys.
I laid all this out on my X account at Will Kunkel, about what the exact timeline was with all the checking, all the injuries with Jordan. I laid it out. And there is one spot that I think before we took live BP when he was here in Houston that they should have gotten. I thought they should have gotten X-ray.
I think there
was that one spot, right? Mm-hmm. But with overall, like the Jeremy thing, if Jeremy's rib is hurting, but he says he's fine and he go lifts, like what is Joe supposed to do? Like go in there and bare bottom spank him and tell him to get out? Like,
if you get hit in the ribs, take an X-ray.
Fine, but he needs to, like, also, the player needs to be self-accountable. Like,
sure. It's not only the Astros medical staff.
You can't just coddle them.
I have no problem giving some player accountability as well, but obviously the medical, to me, the buck stops with the medical team. Like, if you get hit in the ribs, go take an X-ray.
I genuinely don't know how that works. Like, can you be forced? Like, if Jeremy said, no, I'm good, no, I don't want to know, I'll guarantee you on the sidelines, like, of NFL games, like, I don't want to know. Like, just shoot me up. I don't want to know. We'll handle it afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, what if Jeremy's like, I just don't want to know. It feels fine. Let me get this aggression out. That happens after games, too. And you do something like that. And, like, stupidly, he did it. I'm just saying, like, how much you can't – the medical staff – is not going up to Jeremy saying, put the weights down, you're coming with me. Jeremy, like, kick rocks, dude.
Yeah.
You try to get, you see how big Jeremy is.
I don't know. I've watched wrestling enough to know you can be dragged away.
by your earlobe.
Yeah, I mean, you get enough you bring out enough goons from the back, they could drag you out.
Enough guys in black polo shirts.
Yeah, I've seen The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar be separated. It's possible.
Yeah, I think to me, there's an element of that because the best, or there's an element of like the personal player responsibility of that, because the best rehab success story that you can point to in the Astros recent history is Justin Verlander coming back from Tommy John and winning the Cy Young at, was he 40? 39? Well,
you
at that
could
point?
Just play
you know
through.
You know what the funny thing is that though? You're right, Sean.
Yes.
And what are you, okay, looks like you're about to say it. Go ahead and say it.
He did the rehab away from the team.
Yes, yes. The only guy that did the rehab away from the team was the only success story.
But to me, it can be the answer to what we're both saying of that there is some like personal accountability and also some team, like, you know, you look at Luis Garcia, you look at how slow it was to get Christian Javier back. And again, I think some of that is messaging that when a guy gets Tommy John surgery, they're going 12 months and
we all know
across baseball, it's 16.
You don't know what the timeline necessarily is for a rib, like 4 to 8 weeks. That's a big ass window.
Yeah.
To try to narrow down how someone's going to respond. And then you don't know that behind the scenes, they're lifting weights when they shouldn't be, or they're taking dry swings when they shouldn't be, or live acts when they really shouldn't be. Football and baseball are different in the sense that in football, there's certain things you just can't play through, and then there's the head. So that's when the NFL comes in and says, no, you're coming off the field. We saw it. You have to go get tested. In baseball, you can obviously play through a lot more things. You can get away with it. So if a player says, yeah, well, I can swing and I feel good. I mean, all that happens when a guy gets hit in the ribs in the middle of a game is Joe walks out there, puts his hand on his back. How you feeling? You feeling good? You good? You want to stay in? Like, what do you want to do? Trainer comes out, says, how you feeling? How you doing? What do you want to do? That's all that's happening. There's no X-ray imaging right there. Player says, I'm good. Stays in the game. Like, that's it. Yeah. That's how it works in baseball.
I think, like, in game, there's, like, what you're outlining.
And then
correct.
All they do afterwards is really say, still good?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean that.
Maybe it shouldn't be.
Maybe there should be a call for more given the team's history.
Especially like the Jake Meyers, like he can't get through the first pitch of the game.
They didn't even have. Yeah, nope.
Yeah, he got hurt in warmups.
Yeah, so there's. And that's one where it's again, should he have not been out there in warmups, or is that just bad luck that he got hurt in warmups?
What if the team said, are you sure? He said, yeah. He says, all right, but you have to be sure because we need you for the rest of the season. He goes, yeah, I'm sure. And they're like, are you sure, sure? And he's like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, we don't know these conversations.
I want to see this conversation with Joe. No, really.
Sure, sure, sure.
Really.
And they're going to miss first pitch because they keep going back and forth.
The point is, we don't really know how they're handled behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You either assume that they're doing their due diligence, or apparently you assume they're dumb as rocks and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And I don't believe it's that. I tend to believe that they are doing more of the due diligence than not. And it's hard to predict how an injury is going to respond, what the player is going to do on their own time, and what the timeline is to return.
And they err on the side, and this is clear. We all agree that the Astros as a team err on the side of get him out there as soon as
they err on the side of rub some dirt on it, you're okay.
As soon as he's ready to go, get him back out there. Because that is, again, I don't know if that's a full-on strategy, if that is the PR part of it, of Dana Brown sitting in the dugout telling you, like, he looks good out there. Like, we feel confident about this. He'll be back next weekend. And they're not actually dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's of, like, will he be 100%? Or can he just be out there at this timeline? And then anytime you get a small setback, now it looks like an absolute disaster.
So you know what I'll say on that? I bet you that it's not a philosophy within the organization. I'll bet you that it's a culture within the clubhouse. And I'll bet you that if Jose's going through something and he's playing
or
right now, if Cam Smith is going through something, he's going to play through it because Jose is. If Yiner's going through something, if you see guys around you playing through stuff, you might make the wrong decision because, like, these guys are playing, like, my ass is getting out there.
I hear what you're saying. This season's on Jose Altuve. I'm with you.
I mean, what's his OPS, Brian?
It's enough to win my bet against Branham. I know that.
Yeah, I think that Will brings up a really good point. Because
yeah,
that's
it's a culture
that...
thing in the Astros clubhouse. Like, they play through some crap. Like, yeah. And I think that sometimes that can backfire.
And we've heard players talk about, it was Josh Hader at the beginning of the season, where it's just like, hey, being in the Astros clubhouse is just different. Like, there's a different culture.
And you're playing
that...
for something. Mm-hmm. When Hader was out of it, he was like, nah, dude, I'm not pitching back-to-back innings. When you're in Houston, you're playing for something, so you're willing to sacrifice your body more. So maybe that's what's happening. I think we have to be fair in saying maybe the doctors aren't morons. Maybe the GM isn't like, get your ass out there because I told you to. It's not like Varsity Blues or coach is shooting up fat Billy Bob or whatever. What was that coach's name?
Bud Gilmer? Something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah.
I'll look it up. I don't remember.
But anyway, I think it's more of a culture thing where more Astros are willing to play through things because you have Hall of Famers in that clubhouse that play through things. And what about the fact that there's so many guys that are getting called up that, hell no, am I coming out of this lineup? Like, hell no, this might be my only chance. This is my only shot. Yiner Diaz, no way am I coming out because Caratini's hitting well. Yeah. Maybe I'll never see the dish again. I mean, there's, like, that's baseball in general, and especially in that clubhouse and in that culture where there's so many guys coming up and performing, you see a guy lose a spot, and you're like, oh, my God, like, I don't want that to be me. And so Jake is like, all right, so we've got Chaz. He's hit 22 home runs and 70 RBIs before. If I'm out, Chaz could easily take this spot over. Jose's now an outfielder. They've got a young kid in Cam Smith that will not sniff the bench no matter how bad he's performing. So I've got to hold on to my job. I got to get back out there. That's a real thing in all the sports.
And you're balancing all of this while in a pennant race, while in a division race, looking to keep all those streaks alive that you met. I mean, they don't have the ALCS streak alive anymore, but they have the division streak that it won't that has now been broken, and there is a lot of pressure. I do agree that short of playing in New York, Boston, and Philadelphia, maybe Chicago too. Like, Houston is, as far as local pressure goes, probably up there as far as most pressure-packed MLB market to play in, because every game during the summer we lead the show talking about the Astros, and we're talking about all of the Yordan injury and the, like, minutia of when he's coming back and things like that, where I think even other good teams across America, like, I don't know if they're having those conversations with the Dodgers every day. I don't know if in a market like LA or in some of these other ones that outside the Northeast that you are living and dying with 162 games.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I do think there's obviously pressure playing in Houston because there is, I think it more comes from the bar that they've set themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the pressure comes mostly inward for the Astros. There's some pressure because it's a huge city and there's a lot of, there's high expectations, mm-hmm. again, the bar that they set for themselves. But I don't think it's the same pressure, like, especially in Boston.
Yeah, I say that
because it's more of a negative pressure.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't perform, I remember Alec Bohm for the Philadelphia Phillies, mouth, like, I hate it here.
Yeah.
Like, that's a different kind of pressure. You don't see any Houston Astros doing that because it's not like that. It's more of an upbuilding, high expectation. We're not going to boo you and tear you down if you suck. But, like, there is pressure, but it's also not like a negative pressure that you have to deal with.
And you see it a lot in, like, college sports too, where it's a team that's in like a golden era or has a legendary coach or something like that, where it's a little bit of, we don't want to be the group that messes this up. We don't want to be the group that screws it up. And right now, the 2025 Astros, I mean, we've laid it out about all the injuries and how hurt they've been, and there's plenty of explanations for it. But right now, they are the group that is like, well, we're kind of the ones that ended the Astros' golden era, or the Astros' golden era ended on our watch.
Yeah, but I think, again, with the, it's like, if the Texans were 3-0, no real ball player thinks that they're good, and I don't think any real baseball fan thinks that this group allowed it to end because there were so many injuries. Like, there was just so much crap they had to overcome, and albeit I think they overcame a lot. Also, they did play with their food a little bit. Like, they didn't beat the teams that they should have beaten, et cetera, and it wasn't a perfect roster, like, or whatever your excuse might be. I just think, like, appreciate what you have had in Houston, and that this is the blip. The blip is maybe missing the playoffs. Still have a chance. If you sweep, you still need some help. But, and if you go 2-1, then you need the Guardians or the Tigers to get swept. So you're still alive. All you got to do, take care of business, win, and you stay alive. It's one thing is certain. It is not must win. Chime in. I want to hear what you guys have to say about the Astros this year. Do we have any reads?
No, but it was Coach Kilmer, by the way, played by John Voight.
Bud Kilmer.
Gilmore's happy. Coach Happy Gilmore. 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel and Sean Mapes filling in for Joe George and Jerry Branham here on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. We'll be back on the other side talking more Texans, y'all.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk.